Attention truck enthusiasts, are you ready to experience the power, performance, and innovation of a legendary vehicle? Look no further than the 2023 Ford F-150 at Jim K. Ford. We have incredible deals and financing options tailored just for you. Visit Jim K. Ford today and experience the thrill of driving the best-selling truck in Canada, the 2023 Ford F-150. Visit us at 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans or at jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
The Steve Warren Project. Sports and whatever.
Well, look at that. We're 1 week away from Christmas as we're recording this. We should start smashing out some Christmas hits of the past in the old T-Gore days. Anyway, it's Steve Warren along with Jim Jerome. We know him affectionately as Jungle. And how are things today, James?
Well, Stevie, the way this works... is you jump onto my laptop, right? And you push all the buttons. I've never had to do anything to set up a recording or anything. You know, they call them, you know, tutorials when you could allow some access to the laptop. So not so sure that's a good idea, right? To allow people access to your laptop.
Right.
Exactly, folks. Yeah, I could tell what you're thinking. So, I see when you're ready, as you call it, I'm jumping on, right? I'm jumping on right now. So I sit down in front of my laptop and I see it's about their sex life.
Yeah.
And I go, whoa, Steve, holy cripes. I can't get a hold of you. So I noticed your salutation to me this morning was like a little standoffish, sort of like, "Hey Jim,
yeah,
What are you up to? Can we jump into the show, Jim? If you're not busy, Jim, can we jump into the show?"
And right now, and speaking to your technical ability, you've got your camera set up so that I can see most of your keyboard. What is that on your keyboard right there? I'm not sure I'm happy about. The things I'm seeing there, is it okay? Oh. It looks like cigarette ashes. Okay, that's good. I thought it was something else.
No, Steve, it's stuff dripping off the splash guards.
Yeah, because you spill your coffee all the time. I get it.
You said you wanted to bring back old T-Gore stuff. Yeah,
sure are. It's weird that's your story you come up with when we talk about. I say maybe we should talk a little Christmas today. Get all wholesome and stuff, and that's your go-to story. Oh my God! Yeah. But yeah, that was troubling when I went into your computer to set you up and get you set up with our online studio. And the first thing I read is all this stuff about sex and. But it wasn't really
from forensic files. Okay, before I forget to clear it up. We're not going to leave everyone hanging, Steve, before we clear it up.
Oh, right? Yes. No, there would be nobody who would think that would be. I mean, everybody's so surprised, right, that you went down this road. So, yeah, you've cleared it up. Though. That's good.
Yeah. I watch forensic files at night. A lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what you do at night. Murder mystery that's been around a while. And then I watch it when I go to sleep. And and so I have subtitles, Steve, okay, for the show.
Yeah. And many and lotions.
So I'm watching last night and I've taken to just shutting my laptop. Mm-hmm. So obviously it picked up wherever. If I was surfing porn, Steve, if I was, I would come on the show and go, "Hey, Steve, I've been surfing porn."
True. And it would surprise absolutely not one of our listeners.
Yeah. I would just say, "Hey, Steve, I've been searching porn."
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm just practicing that in case I do. It's not that hard to say.
Right, that's fair.
All right. There you go.
So it's one of those, "Methinks thou dost protest too much." Something along those lines, Shakespearean.
Yes. Beethoven.
Let's jump it.
Oh, no.
Beethoven said that. No, that doesn't sound right. No. That doesn't sound
right. And by the way, Beethoven, speaking of what we just did, Beethoven went blind.
I don't think he had access to Pornhub, though.
Well, that's all they did was porn. That's how they lived. Come on in, girls, all eight of you. Bring a bunch of grapes.
Oh, okay.
We'll have an orgy. You know, that's all they did back in that day.
Right. It just wasn't recorded. That's all.
Between writing songs,
Sure.
How'd they fill their time?
Composing and Plowing, The Life of Beethoven.
That a boy, Stevie. Beautiful. All right.
We should jump in, though. Uh-huh. I'm a little distracted today, not by what you've been surfing for there. Crime show. As if. But I'm, as we sat down to record this, we were supposed to do this like a half an hour ago, and then the Sens go and fire DJ Smith. The whole thing has finally gone down after 5 years. Well, this is his fifth year with the club. The Senators finally fired head coach DJ Smith. He's missed the playoffs every single year, and they finally decided, okay, after a 6-3 loss in Vegas, their fourth loss in a row, they're four games under 500, they're officially, you know, we're about the 25-game mark. That was what Pierre Maguire always said. Whatever you are at the 20-25-game mark, that's what you're going to be that season. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Sens measured things out and says, well, that's it. You know, it's time to make a move. And they brought back, 20 years after he left, Jacques Martin, the winningest coach in Sens history. Jacques Martin is the new interim head coach. And at his side, Hall of Famer Daniel Alfredsson taking over as an assistant coach beside him. So I'm fully expecting. So you got Jacques, you got Alfie. They brought back Cyril Leader. They brought back Lyndon Sluage, their anthem singer. I fully expect TSN 1200 is going to hire you and me any day now to bring Absolutely. It all back 20 years.
You're onto something, my friend. You're onto something. You know, I was saying this morning, holy God, no sooner do you hire a coach and whammo, they drop the axe on the poor guy, right? Give him a chance, Steve. Give the guy a chance, you know?
Yeah.
Let him sort of, you know, have a little breathing room, Steve.
Before you. Nobody can ever accuse the audience.
5 years of shit, Steve. That's what 5 years of shit, you know?
Yeah. I say this. You've got what I call a rebuild shield that guards you for the first 2 years because they had just started a rebuild when DJ Smith took over. Maybe a third year even, but this is year five. All the same problems are there. They're off to yet another bad start. He's had a fair chance. I don't even need to get into all the minutiae of DJ Smith's time in Ottawa. The reality is, no matter who he is, Hall of Fame coach or some scrub that hired off the discount bin, doesn't matter. He had a fair opportunity to prove himself and get the team going in the right direction, and he couldn't do it. And so you have to make a change. What do you think of Jacques Martin coming back after 20 years, though?
Well, I think, I love Jacques. Best smelling coach in the league, Steve.
You've said that. It's a Brill Cream thing, I think.
Yeah, it's a Brill Cream deal, yeah. And Dresden.
Oh, Dresden. Gotcha. That's psst, a million Stevie, years old.
Stevie, want to buy some Dresden? Remember he had lined in his...
I don't remember that.
You know, here's the deal, Stevie. Like, you're kind of... You're unfortunately, in sports, or, you know, for these guys, head coaches, coaching jobs, the whole deal is you got to win, okay? You got to come within some sort of you know, winning, you know, the 500 or something, or, you know, or 600 or whatever, winning percentage.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's not the first guy, right, to get done. But they, you know, he lasted a long time, and I don't know why, you know. I'm not sure why. You know, obviously Melnick, you know, like the guy, I guess. You know what they should do, Stevie? It's unfortunate for the poor coach, okay? But like I said, as soon as I saw that announcement that Jacques Martin was coming in some sort of capacity in the front office, really what it should have said, if you just peeled that back underneath, it's like Smith is getting fired, okay? Like that was, you know, 100%, you know, 100%. So it doesn't surprise anyone.
Yeah, a lot of people thought right away that's immediately your plan B. In case of emergency, break glass, and there's a Jacques Martin action figure, winningest coach in franchise history, just sitting there waiting to be grabbed. And well, the people who thought that were absolutely right. I think that was the plan B all along. How can you take it any other way? We talked about it in the last episode. Whatever your profession is, if your boss brings in someone who is really, really good at your job, that doesn't exactly instill you with a lot of faith in your future with that company.
Right, right. As for Jacques, I would bet, and I'm a betting guy, Stevie, Mm-hmm. And I would put my last dollar on it that Jacques said, okay, okay, but I do not, you know, I'm too old to coach anymore. I do not want to coach. I don't want to get back in it. That's a grind, man. That is a, you know, grind. Jacques's no spring chicken, Stevie. So
71.
I'm a betting man, and it's only temporary. Would it be Elfie? I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't think it should be. You know, they did the same thing in oil country. You know, when they hired Jay Woodcroft, he had no experience, mm-hmm. no head coaching experience in the NHL. You know, so. But I think it's purely temporary. You know, so. But I love Jacques. You know, what do you do if all of a sudden and what happened to the Oilers? Right, they fire the coach and then they go on a rip.
Yeah.
They've lost their last two, but they won 8 in a row. You know, they're like 8-2 or something since they hired that coach.
Here's the stats now. Since you brought that up, hold that thought for a second because these are the three teams before DJ Smith. Three teams have fired their coaches so far this season. Your Oilers, they've gone 10-5 since Jay Woodcroft was hired. Minnesota has gone 7-2 since Dean Evason was fired. And St. Louis, since Craig, what did we call him? Since he got fired, 2-0. So there's been a real coach bump, and so the Sens are hoping for some of that sweet action here in the next little while with Jacques Martin. And if you remember it, you know, you'll remember this quote because I've heard you say it before. 20 years ago, when Jason Spezza was a kid, Jacques Martin said, "He's a boy in a man's game," and I think the Sens have a lot of core players who are still, I wouldn't call them boys anymore, but they haven't learned to play that man's game yet. And when Jacques Martin was hired as a consultant last month, one of the first things he talked about was that very thing. So I think that's the thing that Jacques Martin believes is the biggest problem for the Ottawa Senators, and that's the youth factor. And let me see.
Right.
Here's the quote that he had when he was hired last month. "It's not about wins and losses to me. It's about the commitment away from the puck. I think a lot of young players, when they come into the league, their focus is all on offense, and they need time to realize that to win on a consistent basis, to win a championship, you need to play the game 200 feet. And I think if most Sens fans were polled right now, they would all, to a man, to a woman, say the same thing that Jacques Martin said right there. That's exactly the issue with this particular team."
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Lack of a 200
Because I don't like game. That. I don't like that. You know, I just said it. You know, the coach's job, it's all about winning. Mm-hmm. You know, you're hired to win. You're hired to win hockey games. So when I hear Jacques go, it's not about winning and losing. I'm like, no. Fuck off, Jacques. No.
I see what you're saying.
Okay. You tell Jacques right away. Fuck off, Jacques. Okay. None of that shit. Okay. It's about winning and losing. The issue will be if he goes on a run, if he goes on a bit of a heater, Stevie, and it often happens, right? It often happens. It doesn't. I can't recall the last time I see a coach had an abysmal record, and so they fire him, and another coach comes in and loses a bunch. I'd have to think back on that. But you know,
Senators. The Senators in their expansion year. I go back that far. Rick Bowness was the head coach of the expansion Ottawa Senators. He got fired. And then Dave Sparky Allison came in for, I think, about 25 games and won 2 games. But that was, that's just an example of what you're talking about. It does not, you're right, though. The coach bump, I think, happens more frequently than something happened in the other direction.
Ladies and gentlemen, rev up your engines and get ready for the deal of a lifetime. Jim K. Ford is proud to announce the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale, the event you've been waiting for. For a limited time only, Jim K. Ford is offering unbeatable discounts, jaw-dropping financing options, and mind-blowing trade-in deals. Don't miss out on the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale at Jim K. Ford, 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans, or jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
The Glen Walton Real Estate Team would like to take a moment to wish you nothing but happiness and good health this holiday season, safely surrounded by family and friends. Glen thanks Ottawa for the support and partnership and looks forward to working with you in the years to come. Happy holidays from the Glen Walton Real Estate Team at glenwalton.com.
To your point, though, Jacques Martin was the last head coach that got a job in the NHL after being fired by the Ottawa Senators.
Jacques Martin was the last coach. Oh, I see. As a Senator coach to go get a gig.
Yeah. No other coach since Jacques Martin has left Ottawa and gotten another NHL head coaching job.
Not a head coaching job. Yeah. Yeah. But Jacques has been kicking around there, right? He was.
Sure. But the other thing I wanted to address was the wins and losses comment. I believe that, you know, just as a minor hockey coach, this is sort of the way I handle it. Just obviously you're judged on wins and losses, but what he's saying there is you have to just focus on the process, because we all have seen teams play amazing games, and through the pinball lucky bounce of the game of hockey, it's just the nature of the sport, you can lose games that you deserve to win. And so to focus too much on wins and losses and not on the process, making sure you're not getting too high when you win games or low when you lose games, because I think that's one of the things that also is a problem for the Ottawa Senators, given that they're young, they get going, they get a little run going, win three straight, and they think they've won they're a dynasty. They think that they've accomplished something, and they go into, you know, so they win three games in a row and they go into that fourth game as though that other team owes them something. That three-game win streak means nothing to that other team in game four. So that's something that the young squad needs to kind of get their head around, that every shift is, you can't take a shift off. You can't, you know, cut corners and not, you know, dig in for a 50-50 battle or whatever it is. You got to do things the right way, day in, day out, shift in, shift out. And that is the details that Jacques Martin is famous for. He hasn't been winning cups as a head coach since he left Ottawa, let's be honest. So there's obviously, you know, there's obviously some concerns the GMs around the league have had about this coach, but he did win as an assistant, helping the Pittsburgh Penguins as an assistant. But it will be interesting to see if he's the right tonic for this particular group at this particular time at his particular age.
Right. Stevie, when was the famous Uber incident with the players in the car and the guy had him on camera just chopping? Was Smith the coach then?
No, that was the guy prior to him. That was Guy Boucher. But the dialogue inside the Uber was about four or five, six Ottawa Senators in the Uber that were recorded complaining about Marty Raymond, who was at the time Guy Boucher's assistant coach.
Oh, okay. So this means nothing then. Okay. I thought, you know, the whole thing, Stevie, is, you know, Russ was saying, cause we talked about it, of course, and when the Oiler coach got fired, Woodcroft.
How is Russ, by the way? I haven't talked to Russ in so long now, and I'd see him every week there for about 3 years.
Oh, he's fucking annoying. Anyway, yeah, he's annoying, man.
All right, fair enough.
So, like, the whole thing, Stevie, is, which we never know, right, as the fan, is what's the dynamic here, okay? Yeah, you got a coach who's trying to win. He's trying to, you know, like Jacques said, trying to you know, feed them this process, you know. So it's always okay, but did the, fair enough, but are they getting along here, you know? Mm-hmm. Are the fucking players, are they buying in, right? And I don't know whether they were or not, Stevie. I'm not sure, but I don't think so. I don't think.
Oh, they were unbelievable how they got along, but you could see they were getting discouraged and upset about the losing, game in, game out, stuff going wrong. That game against Vegas was especially bad. Like, they're slamming, they're breaking sticks on goalposts, they're smacking their stick on the ice. You can see them on the bench, almost like sulking, almost like. It had that kind of vibe to it. But in terms of getting along with each other and non-game days and in the off season, I've never seen a team thicker than this one, to the point where maybe that's problematic. How many times have you heard it in pro sports history about, well, it's kind of a country club mentality there in that locker room.
Right.
And DJ Smith did seem to fancy himself as one of the lads. Let's get it done, boys. Let's go. And that's one of the accusations people have, that he didn't hold guys accountable enough when things were going sideways.
Yeah. Anyway, back to what Russ was saying is it's way more difficult. It's way harder to coach players in today's NHL than it was in Russ's NHL. And okay. And his reason for it is they're sensitive. That the players are sensitive, and it's difficult for they make a ton of fucking cash. Mm-hmm. You know,
guaranteed.
We are in a time with sort of self entitlement, right? With young people, right? That they're taking this stand on, you know, don't tell me what to do, you know,
yeah,
sort of deal. So, you know, he makes a good point. He makes a good point, you know, and coaches can't do what they used to do, Steve. Like slap guys in the back of the head, you know, or I saw at least three stories this weekend about a coach just yelling at a kid, just yelling at, you know, I saw it at a minor, I guess a European team where the guy got chopped, because he raised his voice, you know, And so people see it and they're like, this is an abomination here. What the, cause the guy swore at a kid, you know?
Right.
You know how frustrating it must be, Steve, to be a school teacher or a coach. I mean, today, no, you can't do that. I can't do what? Yeah. You can't, you know, no, you're going to have to apologize for what you're about to tell the kid.
Right. Yeah.
Fuck.
No, a friend of mine confided in me that he's lost his zest for teaching. It's just a paycheck now. He does it. And it used to be a case of if a kid was going sideways, for whatever reason, academically, behaviorally, you know, he'd want an interview with the parents, you know, have a conversation. Let's see if we can fix this. Get the kid on the right path again. And so frequently, again and again, he'd try to have those conversations, and he'd be told by the parents that it was his fault.
Right.
Not little Johnny's fault. It's your fault, teach. You're a teacher. Yeah. You're getting paid good dough, taxpayer money, whatever. Fix my kid. It's your job. And after a while, you go, well, if the parents are gonna keep behaving this way and any of these, you know, it gets getting harder and harder to lay down any discipline without the world ending. I'm not saying striking anybody or being abusive, but things that what you and I as kids would never even remotely consider as toxic or abusive is now considered that here in 2023.
Right. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to coach with egos. It's hard to coach the best players in the world. It's hard to coach guys who, like, if they show up or not, they're cashing $5-6 million, you right. know,
can't send them to the minors either.
Yeah, right. There's all sorts of, you know, things here that it's like, okay, well, you've kind of handcuffed me a little bit here to try and coach these kids, you know. And like I've seen a couple of interviews where they bench guys, you know, it'll be a big story if they bench a first or second liner, right? And they put the camera on the kid, and he's like, I'm paid to play here. And they go, well, what's that mean? Well, we'll see. Okay, we'll see. You know, I'm here to play. I believe I belong. And if it doesn't fit here in this team, then I'll have to find a fit somewhere else.
Right.
So is that really what you should be saying as opposed to, you got fucking benched, dude. Okay, yeah. You got benched. You know, people don't bench players for, you know, generally in a hockey game. They don't bench you because... You know, I don't know, you fucking yelled at someone in the locker room. They bench you because you're underperforming, right?
Yeah.
And so that should be their reaction, Steve. You know, I'm letting the team down. It's a wake up call for me. You know, I'm 100% my fault at this, and I got to bring it, you know. Now you're going, I want that kid on my team.
Yeah.
You know, but
so many guys are like, demanding trades when stuff like that happens, and the media blows it way out of proportion as well. Like there's so many guys in our industry who, when, because they're always saying things like coaches have to hold these players accountable. You know, they cheat, they need to have their ice time taken away because that's the only tool that the head coach has left. And so when the coach rarely does that, but when they do, then the media makes a big deal out of that. In Columbus, you had Patrick Laine. He was made a healthy scratch, and he called it really embarrassing and da 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 da. And the media made a massive deal out of it when the reality is We should all as fans and media accept it completely when a coach sits a star player down by assuming that he's trying to do what's right for the team. He's not a moron. He's well aware it's a 50 goal score here, but he's doing right. things right now that are hurting the team either on or off the ice. And so you as a fan or in the media need to just sort of go, oh, well, there's probably a really good reason for it. Not the constant reaction that I see again and again when a guy finally gets scratched is, oh, that coach scratched that guy. Doesn't he know he needs him to win? He's a 50 goal scorer. He's hurting the team. Maybe the coach wants to win hockey games and have a team that's rolling in the right direction. So you got to give these guys a little breathing room when they do actually use the one tool they have to discipline these players.
Well, I think, and also, right, there's so much said, okay, when Jacques says they got to buy into the process.
Right.
Okay. The 200 feet thing, okay, they got to play the game. Also part of the process, Steve, is I run the shit here. I run it. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am the coach and I'm running this fucking team. Okay. So that's part of the process. So Jacques comes in there, right, and sits down and goes, you know what? I mean, if you're not playing well, there's going to be consequences, right? And shut your trap if it happens, right? I don't get to get benched. You know, you're lucky you only got benched. And I didn't whip into the general manager and go, you got to get rid of this kid,
right?
You know, right? I'm going to bench you. It's a tough lesson, but not that big a deal. But you got to buy in, you know? You got to buy in. And I think that's a difficult thing to do, right? Jacques's an old-fashioned coach, right? You made a good point there about it's a man's game, right? If you're not prepared to step up, you know. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. I think Jay Woodcroft was too nice to the players. I know that from a pretty good source too, that he was just too soft. You know, on the star players and the like, you know, so
And that, I think therein lies why you're hired to be fired as a coach, because you're either too soft or too hard. You know, Daryl Sutter comes in and turns teams around, but his message gets stale after a while because the players end up hating him because he's not a soft touch in any way, shape, or form with his players, with the media, with anyone. Guys like that run their course. We see the hard-ass coach, you know, bounce around like John Tortorella, for example. And then you have the soft guy, the guy with a soft touch, like Jay Woodcroft. You can make an argument that DJ Smith was in that mode as well. Nobody lasts for very long, because if you're the nice guy coach, after a while, the players start mistaking your kindness for weakness. And if you're the hard ass, players get sick of that too. So that's why I think you can't last as a coach. It's just the reality of things. I could say, unless you're Bill Belichick and you're winning 6 Super Bowls and things like that, then you can go ahead and be whatever kind of coach you want. Success. You know,
it's time for him to go too.
I think it's up to him.
What was I going to say about players?
Did you see Patrick Harrington today? All over social media with, I thought you'd love this, about getting kids into golf.
I did. I saw a lot. I watched it about 4 times.
Wasn't it good?
It was so strong, because it was a cool message. He said, look, how do you know if your kid's interested? Because his kid, the father-son thing was on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The PNC this weekend. And most of the, like it's different combinations of father-son. Annika Sorensen was there with her kid. It was Nelly Korda played in it, I think, with her dad. But most of those kids are unbelievably good players.
Sure.
Okay? Like Tiger's son, John Daly's son, VJ's son, Stricker's daughter is, you know. But Harrington's, so they show Harrington out there, okay, and his son's over the ball. The format, I think, is you like a 2-man scramble, Stevie.
Right.
We both hit shots from the same place, okay? This kid, Stevie, it wouldn't surprise me if they said, this is only his second time holding a golf club. Okay? The kid was terrible. The kid was terrible, right? So, first of all, that just endeared me to this guy so much. To Patrick Harrington, you know, and to his kid, that he would do this, you know, because if I don't have game, and I'm a son, and I'm going, Dad, I do not want to go in here. These fucking kids are unbelievably good, you know, they're unbelievably good. So anyway, they ask him afterwards, you know, this is fantastic that you got your kid involved, and go, what should I do? How do I know if my kid wants to play golf. He's like, you know, he made about 7 zingers that were really good. You know, take your kids somewhere where you're not stressed out. Okay. As the parent. And I totally get that. Yeah. I was a member of a golf course for 13 years. I brought my boys one day. They were in about 10 minutes. They were like, oh my God, Dad, relax with the rules. Would you? Jesus, right. You know, stay there.
That's no
Don't
fun.
Raise your voice. It's no fun. Right. So he had mentioned that, let him do what he wants to do. Okay. Don't go in there and start to hammer him with, you know, technique and all that shit. And then, you know, relax. And then after, I think he said, make sure you hang out for 10 minutes after.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like it had nothing to do with it. You know, you think he's going to go, well, you really got to get them to get on their left side. You know, if you want to get your kid into golf, you know, you got to do this and that. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
I thought it was amazing. I thought it was a real masterclass in child psychology, good parenting, love of golf, what it means, how it's so much more than just, you know, going out there and whacking a ball around and trying to come up with the lowest score you can. It can be so great for families, young families. You know, I'll admit, like, you know, my daughter's now 23. And we were hard in on the competitive golf the competitive hockey and competitive soccer. And we enjoyed that time. It was a great time. But if I had to do over again, I would have had more of an emphasis on getting out where they're just playing some golf.
Right.
We play it now, but I would have liked to add some of that, you know, messaging that Patrick Harrington had that, you know, after your parents are long gone, the nostalgia that goes along with golf, that you got to spend this time on the course with your parents or having an ice cream or a Pepsi afterward right. In the clubhouse with your parents. That's the stuff that endures. So I wish I'd done more of that. So let's close out the show today with Patrick Harrington and his comments.
Just before you do, cause it's a great segment that you've said. It's kind of the old, it's your internet homework is go listen to this interview on YouTube. Yeah. And the other thing is, drop in anything else where he talks about golf. Okay. So what you should be doing with your kid, leave golf for sure. Out and drop in birthday parties, you know, first day of school or
kite
know, his first job, you know, yeah. Drop that in there and you're going to go, this is an unbelievable lesson, you know, unbelievable lesson.
Good stuff. All right, James, enjoy your day, your evening, whatever it may be, depending on when you're listening, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget that our website is stevewproject.com. We'll squeeze in at least one, maybe two more shows before the actual Christmas day, but happy holidays in the meantime. The season is very much upon us. James, enjoy your evening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Good night, everybody. Did I scare you with the slow pause there?
It's a little stoic.
How did he catch the bug of playing golf?
I don't necessarily know. Golf's always been easy because I have the facilities at home. So I would say to a lot of people, you think providing these for your kids is good, but not really. You know, when it's easy for kids, they just tend not to want to do it. So in hindsight, the best way if you want to get your kid into the game of golf is bring them somewhere where you're not stressed. That's very important. Kids pick up on that. Let them do what they like when they're there. Have a bit of fun. If they want to hit one shot, two shots, 10 shots, play in the bunker, look in the water, whatever they want to do, let them do. And generally bring them home before they get tired. So the best thing you could do with a kid early on in golf is say, hey, we have to go home. And don't wait till they're tired and hate it. Wait till when they're actually enjoying themselves. Go home. And the last thing I would say, and this has nothing to do with being a competitive player, it's about the love of the game. When you're finished, take 10 minutes to spend with your son or daughter and go and have Coke, a Pepsi this week. Go and have a Pepsi in the bar, wherever it is, and sit there, have an ice cream and spend 10, 15 minutes. Because if they have that 15 minutes alone time with you, just you and them, for the rest of their life, every time they play golf, they remember the 15 minutes they had with their father or mother. And that's what keep bringing them back to golf for the next. That, and remember, these kids will play golf for 90 years. There's a good chance my kids will be playing when they're 100. So, like, it's a long career. And if every time they play golf, it's bringing that happy memory of when they were a kid and they just got a bit of alone time, a bit of quiet time, a bit of big boy time, you know, where they're sitting there in the clubhouse and enjoying it. So it's very important. Stress-free environment. Don't bring them to the nice country club. That's no use. It makes them soft anyway. Bring them out there, you know, all the players on tour, I guarantee you, we had nothing else to do in our summers. We were thrown out, go to the golf course, and we played 45 holes a day, and it was something to do. Having too many options also won't make them want to play golf, so it's nice when in the summertime, that's the kids all go out, they cycle up to the golf course, whatever, and then they just spend the whole day there. That's another way kids will get to love the game. And remember, it's unlikely if your kid gets good at the game, that doesn't necessarily make them love the game. If your kid loves the game, it's likely that they'll become good at it. It's the love should be first. And it's even more important to get a love of the game, because we all know you plateau when you play golf. There's many plateaus where it really gets frustrating. And if you don't love it, those plateaus are going to stop you playing. You're going to give up. Whereas if you love it, you'll go through anything. So try and get the love of the game for the kids first. They'll figure out how to play great golf. Kids are brilliant. They'll figure it out. You don't need to be teaching your kids how to play golf. You need to be ensuring that they're in an environment that they just love the game. And then they'll start asking questions.